Funny Weather, Art in an Emergency by Olivia Lang, read by Sophie Aldred. You Look at the Sun, February 2019. In November 2015, Jennifer Higgy at Frieze asked if I'd write a regular column for the magazine. I chose Funny Weather as the title because I was imagining weather reports sent from the road, my primary address at the time, and because I had a feeling that the political weather, already erratic, was only going to get weirder, though I by no means predicted the particular storms ahead. The first column was about the refugee crisis. Over the next 4 years, I wrote about many of the rapid and alarming changes that followed on its heels, from Brexit to Trump to Charlottesville, taking in the Grenfell Tower fire, racist killings by the American police, and changes in the law on sex and abortion on both sides of the Atlantic. Frankly, the news was making me crazy. It was happening at such a rate that thinking, the act of making sense, felt permanently balked. Every crisis, every catastrophe, every threat of nuclear war was instantly overridden by the next. There was no possibility of passing through coherent stages of emotion, let alone thinking about responses or alternatives. It seemed as if people were stuck in a spin cycle of terrified paranoia. What I wanted most, apart from a different timeline, was a different kind of time frame in which it might be possible both to feel and to think, to process the intense emotional impact of the news, and to consider how to react, perhaps even to imagine other ways of being. The stopped time of a painting, say, or the drawn-out minutes and compressed years of a novel, in which it is possible to see patterns and consequences that are otherwise invisible. The columns I was writing used art, from Poussin and Turner to Anna Mendieta, Wolfgang Tillmans and Philip Guston, as a way of making sense of the political situation, of wringing meaning out of what were becoming increasingly troubled times. Can art do anything, especially during periods of crisis? In 1967, George Steiner wrote a famous essay in which he observed that a concentration camp commander could read Goethe and Rilke in the evening and still carry out his duties at Auschwitz in the morning, regarding this as evidence that art had failed in its highest function, to humanize. But this makes art sound like a magic bullet, which should reorganize our critical and moral faculties without effort, while simultaneously obliterating free will. Empathy is not something that happens to us when we read Dickens. It's work. What art does is provide material with which to think. New registers. New spaces. After that, friend, it's up to you. I don't think art has a duty to be beautiful or uplifting, and some of the work I'm most drawn to refuses to traffic in either of those qualities. What I care about more, and what forms the uniting interest in nearly all the essays and criticism gathered here, are the ways in which it's concerned with resistance and repair. In this, I'm emphatically informed by an essay the late critic and queer studies pioneer Eve Kosofsky Sedgwick wrote in the early 1990s. Like many people, I've been puzzling over paranoid reading and reparative reading, or "You're so paranoid you probably think this essay is about you," for years, ever since my friend James first told me about it on a scorching day in the West Village. A piece doing some of that puzzling appears later in this collection. Though it's written predominantly for an academic audience, paranoid reading is about something that affects us all, which is how we make sense of the world, how we approach knowledge and uncertainty, as we are constantly doing in the course of our daily lives, and particularly at times of rapid political or cultural change. Sedgwick begins by describing the paranoid approach, so common and widely practiced, that we sometimes forget there are alternatives to it. A paranoid reader is concerned with gathering information, tracing links, and making the hidden visible. They anticipate and are perennially defended against disaster,